All rise for the venerable 4T podcast. Put your hands together and say, Amen.
Amen.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 4T podcast. I'm Austin.
And I'm Brian.
And today we're going to talk about religion in Japan. More specifically, Buddhism, Shintoism, and Buddy Christ.
Buddy Christ.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's go over religion in Japan. What religions are there here in Japan?
Well, the main religion that what you could say is the Japanese religion is technically Shintoism.
Yes.
And that goes into like Japanese ancestor worship. So, and that Shintoism is basically Japanese ancestor worship. So there are some gods that are responsible for creation that fall under the Shintoism. But the majority of gods inside Shintoism trace back like 2,000 years and whatnot.
Most of China, correctly?
No. With the Japanese gods. So let me talk a little bit about ancestor worship, what ancestor worship is. So when we say ancestor worship, we're not talking about the people like praying to their ancestors as if their ancestors are gods. More of kind of how the in the Catholic Church, how people pray to saints. So you pray to a saint for a specific attribute. As an example, because I used to be Catholic, if you have something that's lost, you would pray to Saint Anthony, the patron saint of lost items, and Saint Anthony would help you find that lost item. So it's kind of, ancestor worship is a lot like that. Now, how this dates back is when someone like a prominent member of a certain family would die, they would get buried, obviously, and then the family would visit the grave and they would pray for their dead relative. Now, throughout the years, specific people going to specific graves, when, let's just say, the harvest went very well one year, or let's just say that there was a massive earthquake or something of destruction, people would continue to pray at these specific graves for either a prosperous year with crops or so that there isn't another major earthquake. And from there, vast amount of the Japanese Shinto gods come from that practice.
Okay. And so in today's most homes we have the Butsudan.
Yep.
Is that Buddhist or Shinto?
That's Buddhist.
Buddhist. Dang. Yeah. So close. Okay.
Yeah, it's and here's the funny thing, we'll get into this with Buddhism in a minute. Buddhism in its raw form, the rawest form of Buddhism, technically has no gods. That is why Buddhism it can intertwine with other religions. So Shintoism has many gods, but Buddhism has no gods. So a lot of people in Japan are Shinto Buddhists.
Yes. Yes, that's a term I heard a lot when I first came to Japan. Very interesting. Shinto Buddhist.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what I was going to say is, so a lot of times at shrines in Japan, almost every shrine in Japan is a Shinto god.
Yes.
But gods, other gods through Chinese Buddhism and whatnot, in temples tend to be, brought over from Buddhism through Chinese Buddhism as well. As an example, Canon. The goddess of mercy is a Buddhist god brought over from China. And then there's Akala.
Okay.
Akala is the fire demon.
Ah.
The guy represented with a sword and the fire.
Yep, the ring of fire.
And he's got like that stern look with like the long teeth.
Yeah,
I think it's the Buddhist god of wisdom.
It's a scary god of wisdom.
Right, but yeah. But anyway, that is also a Buddhist god brought to Japan from China.
China.
And technically, that even goes even farther back and goes back from India to China to Japan.
There you go. Okay.
Where Buddhism originated.
Yep. So they say America is a melting pot. Well, Japan's a melting pot of religions.
Yep.
Sounds like. So there's Shintoism, Buddhism, and what other religions are there here in Japan?
Well, there is... There, I mean, you can find, like, if you're Catholic, you can find a Catholic church here.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there are two in Sendai.
Sounds about right, yeah.
Yep. And if there are a few other Protestant churches as well in the area, too.
Yep.
There's a few of them around here. So, I mean, if you are a Christian, you might be able to find your denomination. You might be able to find a church with your denomination here. I know the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons.
Yes.
There's a church in Tokyo, I know that.
There's a church
temple?
There's a temple in Tokyo, and they have, what is it, branches all throughout Japan.
Yep. So Japan has many different, like, religions practiced within Japan. But religions specific to the Japanese include a specific form of Christianity and Shinto Buddhism mixed together. There, you really will not find someone who says that I am Shinto only.
Yeah, not so much.
Yeah, pretty much most people that believe in Shinto also believe in Buddhism at the same time.
Yeah, for example, in my home, I was born and raised Christian, but in my home we have a Butsudan, the ancestor shrine,
yep,
inside the house. That's Buddhist. And we also have the Kamidana. Kamidana?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where all the Shinto gods stay.
Yep.
So it's a mixture of both in my family. And then there's Buddy Christ thrown in there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a very interesting mix of cultures and religions.
Yeah. No, so the funny thing when we're talking about Buddy Christ, okay... Now, we're not doing this as an insult to either Japan or people who are of the Christian faith.
And it's not a shout-out to Kevin Smith, just saying that.
Right. Or, you know, all the creators, of Dogma. Anyway, or get a shout-out to George Carlin.
There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, but what this is there is a story for Aomori, which is in the northern part of Tohoku, about Jesus not dying on the cross, but instead of dying on the cross, moved to Japan to live in Aomori, and his brother casually took his place on the cross. Now, in Aomori... With this said, I mean, this is not just like some random urban legend. There is actually a location you can go to where they have a temple for Jesus Christ. They have a gravesite for Jesus Christ. And they have all these different things in the area based around this story. And they've been there for many, many years. They even have a procession where they take a shrine up the hill to, like, commemorate Jesus' death in Aomori. So a bunch of people carry the shrine up this hill.
Interesting stuff. Even Japan.
Find it absolutely hilarious that the translation is that Jesus' brother casually took his place on the cross.
It's an amazing story. I mean,
yeah,
that would be a revelation.
Yeah. No, but one thing I will say is that... Christianity had kind of a rough start in Japan. Around the 15th century or so is when the Spanish and Portuguese came and brought the Catholic Church and the Jesuits. And shortly after, the English and Dutch came and they brought Protestantism to Japan. And there was kind of, I don't want to say a warring period, but more of a area of religious disagreement.
You could say that, yeah. Persecution, yeah.
And martyrs and beheadings and witch hunts.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there was a lot of there was a huge basically up until the point of the Sakoku period, there was this huge thing about Christian influence in Japan. Now, one of the main reasons why this was thought of as bad by the Japanese is because people that were becoming Christian, there were two reasons why. One reason was it was going to deny the divinity of the emperor, who, according to Japanese like Shinto tradition, is actually a direct descendant of the gods. And secondly, the other reason why it was what is it looked at as bad is because at the time Japan had a caste system. So you'd have like the samurai were the top caste, then you would have the artisans. No, peasants. You had the samurai, peasants, and then there was the artisans and merchants. So the artists and merchants,
Right.
and then there was what's called the burakumin.
Yeah, I remember that.
And what happened is that when Christianity came to Japan, the whole concept of it basically destroyed that caste system. So people that would try to intermarry between caste systems before they couldn't do that. Now with Christianity they could, and this was attempting to basically overthrow that current state of Japanese culture.
And this led up to the persecution of Christians in Japan, and then ultimately to the closing of Japan for, what, 200 years?
Yeah,
Was it?
a little bit. So it was like 1600s until like 1865.
So around 200 years until Perry came and forced open everything.
Yeah.
Yep.
So getting back to this, like when we talk about Buddhism, when you think of Buddhism, you should think of Buddhism a lot like how you think of Christianity, where Buddhism isn't just one religion. So there are many different sects of Buddhism. I mean, there's Buddhism that allows for what is it, fighting.
Ooh.
There's Buddhism that requires pacifism. And there is Buddhism like Jainism. And Jainism in what is it? It's like India, Nepal. In that area there. There's what they call Jains, and what Jains do is they feel that if they kill any organism, that is what is it? It'll affect them in their next life.
Like
So
karmic effect.
yeah, so they even cover their mouths with special masks as to not ingest microbes, to limit the amount of destruction caused by indirectly caused by their own bodies.
So with that many sects of Buddhism in Japan, Buddhism in the world,
Right.
what's the main one that has come over to Japan?
Well, there are basically two types. The type that's basically practiced by everybody in Japan allows you to actually eat meat.
Ooh, okay.
So you can eat meat in what is it, that section of Buddhism. And the whole concept of the Japanese Shinto Buddhism that's in Japan basically corresponds very well with Japanese tribalism. So basically, do good to others. What is it? Don't, the basic tenets of most religions.
Right.
But
Be
more,
good and
right.
yeah.
And like, don't cheat people. Another thing is that there's another more stricter version of Buddhism that's practiced by the monks that doesn't allow them to eat any meat. And we talked about this, I talked about this with Roger in the vegetarianism video with the Shojin Ryori. And that Shojin Ryori is that kind of strict Buddhist preparation of food where you don't have any animal products in it whatsoever.
Yes.
So, and that plays into that part of that area of Buddhism.
So with Buddhism in Japan, I know that there's the Four Great Truths and the Eightfold Path. So How is that? Is there any difference between the way it's practiced in other countries and in Japan that you know of?
Well, the Four Great Truths and the Eightfold Path are basically universal throughout all of Buddhism.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of like Christianity and the Ten Commandments.
Ten Commandments, okay.
One thing that is very different, that is different in like Chinese, it's a little bit different in Chinese and Japanese Buddhism. They're very similar, a little bit different, is the levels of heaven and hell.
Hmm.
Okay. So there are technically six levels, and based on how you live your life, your reincarnation will go to one of those levels.
Okay.
So, as an example, there are the very top level is the state of Nirvana,
right?
The perfect understanding, the enlightenment, and that's absolute enlightenment. You understand everything there is to know.
Mm.
Okay, and that is the state that which everybody who practices Buddhism is trying to attain. Then you have what they call the Bodhisattva. Okay. Which is kind of like, I don't want to call them gods, but more like demigods.
Okay.
And what they are, they're people that are so enlightened by Buddhism. They haven't reached full enlightenment, but they're so enlightened by Buddhism that they can affect the world around them.
Hmm.
Basically kind of like magic.
Okay, so they would be the Christian equivalent of saints?
Yeah, kind of like that, except for usually they have like a special power of some kind. Kind of like a saint that was an X-Men.
Awesome. Talking my language there.
Right. So then you have the human realm. And that's where basically most everybody who practices the religion is at.
That's me.
So on the human level, one of the main things is how you interact with people will determine whether you can move up or move down. And moving down is not as good, obviously. So from the human section, you move down to the beast, animals, and insects.
Hmm.
So in that area, basically, when you reincarnate as an animal. So you might live a shorter life, but if you live a good life as an animal, you could move back up to being a human.
Right.
Now, let's say that, and there's many different states. Obviously, if you're a tortoise, you lived like 150 years. But if you're like a mayfly, you live 24 hours. So how you live your life in that 24 hours will determine what life you will have next time you're reincarnated. After that is the demons, ghosts, or not demons, there's the ghosts and specters and monsters.
Section. The Halloween section.
Yeah, basically the Halloween section.
Okay.
Is underneath the animal section.
Okay.
And one thing that's prominent in Japanese stories and storytelling is that even if someone is like a demon or even if something is like a monster, they have a conscience and they have a conscious choice of whether they want to do good or evil.
Hmm.
And we'll talk about this in a later episode. But last and bottom is basically hell. So, and in hell, you can either be like a demon, you could be like usually that's the worst state you can possibly be in.
Hmm.
But because of that conscious choice, you can make conscious decisions to do good, which will move your status up.
Ah, okay.
So there are certain people that choose to be at the state of like entire evil.
Interesting.
That live in it. So those are the six main states of existence inside Buddhism.
Okay. Very interesting. Very interesting. So Japan is Shinto and Buddhism, or Shinto Buddhist and Christian mostly.
Mm-hmm.
They have the universal six eightfold paths and four noble truths and the Ten Commandments.
Yep.
So what else in Japan... what kind of effect does that have on the society of Japan?
Well, Buddhism, because Buddhism is based around the ideals that it's not really a forgiveness system. So like in like a Christian society, if you were to do something bad and you were to ask for forgiveness, you could be forgiven of that sin.
Hmm.
in Buddhism, if you do something bad, you must do something good to to cancel out that level of bad. So in that case here with the Japanese tribalism kind of mixed in with this, is people are really, really focused on trying to make sure that everything they do is done in to perfection and done very, very well, because they don't want to be put in the state of bad karma.
Yes. Okay. And so in Japan, there's things like the tea ceremonies or the ikebana, that are very meditative. And so does that play in, do you think that plays into the Buddhist mindset as well? I know that the tea ceremony was originally created as a way for samurai to stay awake during Zen meditation. Yep. And ikebana is a meditative process as well.
If I'm not mistaken, the tea ceremony also has something to do with a Japanese Shinto religious ceremony. Ooh. Based on renewing one's vows for marriage, if I'm not mistaken.
Really?
Like, the whole concept is that the couple make tea for each other.
Okay.
And if one refuses the tea given by the other person, then that means that person wants a divorce. If they both drink the tea, then that means that it's like another year of marriage or another certain time period of marriage is to continue or something along those lines.
I better not ever take my wife to a tea ceremony. She hates the tea.
Yeah. No, but this is like something like a really, really old practice.
Right.
Like something that's like 600, like 500 to 600 years old.
Mm.
But it's not commonly done now, just so you know.
But it was a practice in the past.
Right.
Okay.
And that's actually kind of a really Japanese thing.
Hmm.
Which is a really Japanese way to approach a topic, let's just say, of divorce.
Right.
Or anniversaries. In this case, the person is not directly saying no, but by refusing the tea, they are saying no.
All right. Interesting. Interesting stuff. Very cool. All right. So then, now, modern day Japan, everyone has their cell phones and everyone's always playing on everything.
Mm-hmm.
Does religion even play a part in Japanese culture nowadays?
Well, I'm not going to knock Japanese Shinto Buddhism.
Okay.
I'm not going to say that there aren't devout people out there.
Hmm.
I will say the vast majority of Japanese people, especially with the younger generation and even the middle-aged generation between 40s and 50s, most people are Easter Christmas Catholics. So if someone is getting married, you would go to the shrine to pray at the shrine for the person if they're getting married. You wouldn't necessarily go to the shrine like you would if you were moving. I'll explain this in a little bit. New Year's, everybody goes to the temple or goes to the shrine to pray for something that they wish for the new year.
Yep.
That is a staunchly Shinto Buddhist practice. People don't go to the temple and whatnot on a regular basis, but they go during New Year's to do that.
Yep.
What is it? When you present the baby to your baby to the gods.
Ah, there you go.
People go to do that, but they do that the one time for that child. But there's also 357,
yep.
Shichigo-san.
Yep.
Or 7753.
Yeah.
The year 7, or the number 7, 5, and 3 are lucky in Japan. So there's when you turn 7, turn 5, and turn 3, there's a special ceremony that you go to pray at the temples.
Yep, and that's when you'll always see the Girls' Day dolls out and the boys' Kabuto, the samurai outfits.
Yep.
So that's the same. That's the same thing.
Yeah, the Hinamatsuri and the what yep. is it? The Koinobori.
Ah, Koinobori. Yeah, there you go. The giant fish.
Yep.
Yep. Really cool.
Yep. Like those. So, what I was, what was I saying? I was going to get back to.
Oh gosh, what was I going to get back to, guys? Write in the comments. I don't know. you were talking about. Right before we talked about religion, and we were talking about religion in Japan.
Yep.
And then we. Oh, you.
I was gonna talk about.
You were gonna talk about something.
Something with the shrine.
Something with the shrine.
We'll be right back.
Yeah.
So, we are back. After doing a slight bit of research of re-looking at what we were supposed to talk about before, and I figured out what it was. So we were talking about different practices that Japanese people do on a regular basis, but now I'm going to talk about a practice that has really just, I don't want to say it's died off, but really is not done to the extent that it was practiced many years ago. So as an example, we talked about, you know, praying at the shrine or praying at the temple for New Year's is something that pretty much almost all Japanese people do as a part of Japanese culture, as well as a part of Shinto Buddhism. There's another practice in Japan that is tapered off, if you would, and it's basically the process of moving. So in Japan, you obviously, you know, people nowadays just move all the time. But in old Japan, when you would move to a new house, you'd have to go to a shrine. And at the shrine, you would have to pray to the god with a priest that you paid to come and pray for you. And you would pray to the god to allow you to leave to go to a new location. But not only would you have to pray at the shrine that's in your village, you would have to pray for the, at the shrine that's in your city and pray to the shrine that's in your like prefecture, or like your main area. Then you would move to your new location, find a priest from that area to pay, to pray at the main shrine, then pray at the city shrine, and then pray at the village shrine for you to move to that location.
Yeah, and this is a practice that no one really does anymore. A lot of people, if they do move, they go to their local little shrine, and that's all they'll do. So when you move, you go and you say, thank you. And then you go to your new place and you say, you know, please be nice to us and let's have a good relationship.
Yep.
But that's about all people do nowadays.
The only place that has a really one practice that has basically been grounded the exact same way, like this this prayer service, like the moving service that has been grounded that still practices today, is when people move graves.
Oh.
So if you have to, like, after the earthquake and tsunami, there was a lot of problems with, like, graves and gravestones. And just a lot of people needed to move their ancestors and their family's remains to different locations. So if you're going to move a grave, you have to get a priest to come in to basically perform a ceremony at the location. Then you need to move everything, move it to the new location, have a priest perform another ceremony, and then put the items back in there. Basically, that priest has to pray to the god at the shrine or the temple that is housing the remains currently, and then pray to the god at the shrine or temple that is going to be the new place housing the remains. And that practice is still practiced very heavily and very staunchly today.
Yes. Yeah, moving graves isn't done that often, but in times like the big earthquake, it's still something that is practiced to the T, as it was back in the day.
Yes.
Some other interesting things that are done today are when you build a new house. When you build a new house, you will have the priests come in, and before even ground is broken, they will have the priest come in, and you will have a mound of dirt with some ceremonial sticks of with white paper.
Oh, cleansing. It's the white paper that's kind of like folded,
yes.
Kind of look like a lightning bolt.
Yes.
It's to cleanse.
Yes.
It's cleanse and to drive away demons.
So you'll have on the whole place, the plot of land where your house will be, they'll put those all around, and then they'll have a big mound of dirt in the middle. Everyone will come. Your whole family will come, and you'll pray to the gods. I don't know what specific god it would be, but they pray, and then the head of the household breaks the seal on the dirt. So does the first scoop, and that is a prayer for the house. And then once the house is built, you have another ceremony where, before it's completed, you put a special lucky charm, omamori, in the roof, facing north, I believe. And then you'll pray one more time, burn some incense, and then finish the house that way. And then when you move in, there's another house cleansing, welcoming ceremony that you have to do. And it depends. A lot of people will only have one priest come in, so Shinto or Buddhist. My family, we had Shinto, Shinto priest, Buddhist priest, and a Christian priest come in and do all of the ceremonies together. Mm-hmm. But the ceremony of breaking the ground comes from Shinto, I believe.
Yep. One of the things to keep in mind is when you're trying to figure out whether if someone's a Buddhist priest or someone's a Shinto priest, first thing to look at is see if they have hair. If they have hair, they are probably a Shinto priest.
Yeah.
And usually the Shinto priests have a full elaborate, wardrobe that they wear, as well with that black kind of pointed hat.
Yes.
And it usually has like a stream of something.
Yeah, something that it's like something that comes out from the front. It's a hard hat. It's hard to explain.
Right. And a Buddhist priest will basically be dressed in like the orange or maroon robe.
Yep.
As well.
For the
and
most part.
Usually they're bald.
Usually, yep.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's
got sandals.
Sandals, yeah.
Yeah.
It's an interesting
Tabi.
There you go. Tabi, the wooden sandals.
Oh no, those are geta. Tabi are the ones that look like the giant socks, like ninja boots.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, and it's interesting some of the priests will actually have alternate jobs as well. So like one of the Buddhist priests in the town I live in, he's actually the principal of a school I work at as well.
Oh really?
Yeah, so it's quite interesting dynamic.
Right. And yeah, I mean, it's the same thing with like the Shinto priest at the same time. That might be the guy that's changing your tires. That also goes into Miko.
Mm-hmm.
Miko-san.
Yes.
In Japanese culture, the religious, like the Shinto religious side of Japanese culture is not a full-on patriarchy. There is like specific things that the male priests are responsible for, and then there's what's called miko, which are the female priestesses, and they're responsible for something else. Now usually they don't cross over all that much,
not so much though.
But I have seen in recent years a female priest, not like the priestess, but like a female in like the omyoji.
Oh yes,
like yep. What is it?
The yep
wardrobe.
Yep. There's one famous priest. She's priest.
Priestess.
Well, she's not the miko, but she's the actual priestess.
Yeah.
I forget her name though. But yeah, she's fairly popular, and I've noticed it too. Around down in Sendai, when you walk around, there's always, I think, Buddhist priests who are sitting on the corner with the alms bowl.
Oh, are you the guys dressed all in white?
All in black. With the round hats.
It could be the time of the year that they're close, because there's the ones that wear white.
And those are those ones are the tabi, right? Going to the different shrines. Yeah, that's another.
They wear tabi. Yeah, if it's a traveling Buddhist, normally they're dressed all in white with the giant like. What is it? Woven hat.
Yeah.
And they literally walk everywhere. They have like a bag that sits in front of them like this that they carry with them. And they always ask for money.
Yep. That's something actually really cool to be able to see people walk around like that. And there's also ones that are just asking for alms on the side of the street as
Yep.
well. Now, one thing about that though, there are a lot of people who will just go buy the clothes and just sit on the side of the street to get free money.
Yep.
So
You can
be
usually
careful.
tell who is who based on how well they pray.
Yeah, it's actually fairly interesting. You can tell by the by how they've memorized it than the wording.
Yep.
So that's something to look out for and just be aware
Aware,
of in
yeah.
Japan. Yep.
That's something that's pretty cool too.
Yeah, I enjoy seeing it all the always.
Yep. So as we discussed, Shintoism is basically kind of like Japanese saints, and it's derived from people that had died, but people who continued to pray at those graves. And then those graves basically turned into the shrines. And then so your shrine size determines on how prominent that god is. So like you'll see Inari shrines are like all over the place. But if you see this little small shrine that's next to a bigger shrine, that's kind of that's a Shinto god that plays probably a lesser has a le is lesser known compared to a different god.
Yeah, it's very interesting because you will walk around sometimes if there's a giant shrine and there's a lot of little shrines all around.
Right.
It's very interesting to see. Very interesting.
So I think that's all we got for this right now.
I think we're about to get into some more interesting stuff, so stay tuned for the next episode.
All right, we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.